All right, Dwayne Brummett here with Allie Alborigo, School Owner Talk.com. Allie, nice to be with you again.
Yeah, Dwayne, and me too. I feel great talking to you and spending a Monday morning, because that's when we do our calls, getting to start my day chatting with you, because it actually, it just inspires me to do better in my business by being on the phone and talking about, stuff that we all need in our companies.
Yeah, I love just the Monday morning routine of it and getting able to share back and forth what's been happening over the week or weekend and, struggles or what have you. So it's nice to have a buddy, a pal, a chum, a friend, amigo, associate, matey, partner, comrade, whatever you want to call us. But, just to be able to have that, to be able to bounce that back and forth, and I appreciate our friendship. I just real quickly didn't get a chance to tell you, but over the week, I've been training for the Chicago Marathon. I don't know if I told you that. And I had 18 miles to run this weekend on Saturday. Well, Friday when I was out running, I had 8 miles to run on Friday, and I was out running, and about mile six, my IT band started hurting. And I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm going to back off and just not keep running. And so then I did that. And then on Saturday I was out running. I was supposed to run 12 at a nice, 9:20 pace. Per mile, and I was doing, about 9:01, 9:10 pace, and then I got to mile 12, and then I'm supposed to do it fast, so I'm supposed to do like 8:40s, and that's fast for me, by the way, not for most people maybe, but that's fast for me, and but my knee was killing me, and I was stupid, and I went ahead and pushed the other 3 miles fast, and I was supposed to do 3 miles slow again, or at the 9:20 pace, and I got to mile 15 and I stopped. I had to call my wife and see if she could come pick me up, and I couldn't get a hold of her. And so I called my mom, and my mom came and picked me up. So I'm kind of nursing my knee back to health, but it just, reminded me that that you got to push to pain, not through pain sometimes when it comes to your body. But that's not necessarily the case with our businesses, right? I mean, when we get to pain sometimes, and actually, most of the time, we got to push through the pain, or at least learn how to get around it. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, right?
Yeah, and that's a great segue. And by the way, years ago, we're talking like 15, 20 years ago, an 8-minute mile was something was unheard of, right? Not many people ran an 8-minute mile. And then somebody did it. I forget who it was. I'm not a big runner, but I remember reading something about the guy who finally broke the 8-minute mile or the 6-minute mile, and then it became almost like a standard. It was like, wow, you could do this. It's not impossible. It's not a pipe dream. It's not just super athletes, the bionic man kind of thing. It's really all about, knowing what your limitations are and knowing whether you're capable of them. So interesting, right? So that's cool. Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to talk about that. How do school owners break through? I mean, typically a school owner has a school, builds it to have students, teaches the students. He becomes what we classically call an employee of the company, but he's self-employed because he controls his own destiny. He works and he's made himself a job. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And if you read The E-Myth, that's exactly what it talks about in the E-Myth, Michael Gerber.
Yep, even Rich Dad, Poor Dad talks about that, in his Rob Kiyosaki in the Cash Flow Quadrants. It's all about, finding yourself in quadrants, what he calls 3 and 4. And, I recommend to anybody who's listening to read those books, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber and also Cash Flow Quadrants by Rob Kiyosaki. However, it's a very difficult transition, but for many reasons that people can't step out of the day-to-day, what Stephen Covey from Franklin Covey calls the thick of things, being in the thick of things. And sometimes we get addicted to being in the busyness. Sometimes we don't feel like we're achieving unless we're busy. I see people all the time, and I do this drill, and it'd be fun for the listeners to do it. And I do this with all my coaching clients. I say to them, I want you to journal everything that you do from the morning you wake up to the minute you hit your pillow, your head hits the pillow at night. and literally write it on a message pad. You could be a nerd for the day and have one of those little pocket protector message pads with a pen, or you could type it into your phone, whatever the choice may be, but you have to literally write down everything you do. And I really want it to be graphic, too. I don't want to know what, you know, but you went to the bathroom, you took a shower. That's about as detailed as you could get. But I want to know how much time was spent. You know, you drove to work. It took you 40 minutes because you live far from your company. And, you know, then you got to your business. And you didn't just get to your business, but you got in and you unlocked the key. And you could get as detailed as in as saying, you know, I turned the key to the left and I turned the alarm system off, you know. So, you know, with that being said, you know, what did you do to get there? You know, and you might be asking why so much detail, because after we deconstruct this, it could be your playbook. It literally could be your playbook for your employees, how to open up the school. That goes to the staff member who's never done it before, kind of thing. So literally doing that for an entire week. And then the last step is to break it down in categories. For example, busy work, color them all in blue, marketing, growth of the business, different colors, health and fitness, you know, taking care of your mind and your body, you know, sleep and diet. All of those things should be written down, and we can break them into color categories so that we see where our time is being best spent. Does that make sense?
It totally does, and it's there's a – usually an awakening that happens if you really do it, and then, you know, whether or not you're color coordinating or not, which the colors do help, obviously. But, it brings to light that, well, I know, like, for me, activity doesn't necessarily mean accomplishment. And you'll see that when you do this, that there'll be a lot of activity that you are doing, but there might not be a whole bunch of accomplishment happening.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. And however, that also gets to show you all the time wasters in our lives, you know. And I'm a big TV junkie, you know. I love it. It's literally my escape. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I never tried it in my life. I don't do drugs, you know. I like to cook. I eat healthy, and however, I also love to watch TV. And people are amazed with the amount of TV that I watch. But it's actually scheduled time, and it's in my downtime. That's what I do to escape my reality and just relax and, you know, break down, you know, my day. However, I'll give you an example. I once had a guy I was coaching who never had time for anything, literally anything at all. He was always too busy. He happened to be addicted to learning to play guitar, so that was one of his goals, to learn how to play the guitar. When I had him journal, and we finally looked at what he was doing, it was shocking to see. He was playing his guitar about 47 hours a week. His business he was doing maybe about 20, because half the time when he was there, he was playing his guitar at his business. So interestingly enough, the guy thought he was busy. He was overwhelmed. He was tired. He was exhausted. He couldn't find time for anything. Yet he was wasting 40-some-odd hours a week on playing his guitar. So what are we doing that wastes our time? You know, what are we doing that takes away from what we do? You know, that our business and our growth? That's a real good question. So that's why this journaling is important.
Yeah, and I bet you that, you know, some of the things that you would find is that you're spending way too much time on email. You're spending way too much time on the Internet, probably Facebook. Which is or Twitter or whatever, but mostly Facebook. Those are just real, real time wasters. And, you know, I guess what I would say is, you know, you need to schedule the time that you're going to open up your email. You're going to decide, you know, basically you need to set parameters for yourself on what you're going to do and how you're going to respond to things. And then the other thing is, like, so I'll give you, for instance, it's at 1:30 in the afternoon. That's when I open up my emails.
Right.
But I will say this. I get up 5:30 every morning, and just like routine, sorry to be graphic, I got to go to the bathroom. I do bring my smartphone with me, and I will literally go through my email and delete the things that I'm not going to look at.
Right.
And then I don't open up any other emails. And I've trained myself to do that. Like, before, when I used to do that, if I saw something that interests me, I would open it up. But I do not do that anymore. I don't open it up until 1:30 in the afternoon. At 1:30 in the afternoon, of course, there's been some other emails that have come through that I'll just go through and delete that if I don't want to look at. But then the next thing that I do is I have a prescribed way to respond back to emails. And so let's just say that, you know, if it were you that emailed me, let's say, and you wanted to say, hey, let's get together this week on the phone, whatever. What do you have open? I will give you options, and I will say, well, I have this date and this date with this time and this time. Which one works better for you?
Right.
I don't just say, well, I have, you know, and so I respond back as clear as I possibly can to get you to choose one of those, so
right.
that we're not playing back and forth tag. So that's
right.
one important thing, is that you really want to communicate very well inside of your email, so that one email should handle that situation to the best of your ability, maybe two at the most. The other thing is, you need to have a folder inside of your email that you have, that if there is or are things that you do want to check out on the internet, but you don't have time that day because it's not scheduled, you know, then you move it to that folder, or you have a program inside of Outlook. There's programs you can buy, you know, that will schedule it for a later date. Or you can make it as an appointment for a later date. Like, I have a specific time set aside on Fridays to go through any emails that I have thrown into that folder that I want to, you know, see, you know, read this about this person or this product or whatever. I throw inside of there. So they're all scheduled, but I only spend half an hour on my email checking it and responding back every day. I used to do it twice a day. Now I do it once a day.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with you. And you know what? Interestingly enough, I think we spoke about this, or I might have mentioned it on a prior call, is I've done the Franklin Covey time management system, and I've done their seminars a number of times, not just once, but probably like 10 times. I probably went every year in a row for like, you know, 9 or 8 years, and then skipped a few and went back. And I would bring my staff. I would buy them the kit. I would teach them how to manage their time, teach them how to goal set. And we go through the seminar together. The reason why I bring this up is because initially, when I first started doing this, email, Facebook, internet was not even a concern. Nowadays, they teach you how to manage it, because it soaks up so much time in a person's life where they do not have productivity. And that's where we need to be really careful. Now, with that being said, I'm coaching someone right now, and they're taking the next step to build their business, like the e-myth, and they're going from being an employee or self-employed to being a business owner. And I wanted to bring that up because it's a huge struggle for many reasons to get through that. And I'll tell you some of my sticking points that I had was I had an addiction to control. Like, I wanted that old mentality, and the reason why the saying was made was because of this, was like, if you can't do it right, if they can't do it right, I'll just do it myself. Why bother delegating if I could just do it better than everyone? Why bother passing things across the table and delegating when I'm the only one who knows what I'm doing? You know, why waste time? However, that mentality actually in the long run costs you so much time, because you're doing it all yourself, and you only in real time, if you do not sleep, you have 168 hours in the week. That's not a lot of time. So if you're doing everything yourself, you're only going to be able to take on a certain amount, and then you're going to get so burnt out and so tired and so disjointed that then you burn out and you get sick, or you get frustrated, or you just don't want to do it anymore, and you end up hating what you used to love, especially if we're in the martial arts. So you got to learn that balance in between and how to say, okay, let me give this to so-and-so. Let me delegate like you, Dwayne. You're amazing at getting to offload this to different kind of companies, like, you know, a bookkeeper, an online virtual assistant, you know, and all that stuff. There's so many things out there nowadays that you could be doing, right? What do you think about that?
Totally. But here's I think the biggest problem, like you said, is the control factor. But I can remember when I started delegating the teaching. And my biggest problem was I started having my new teachers start to teach the junior black belts. And then these people had been with me for, well, up to that point, at least three and a half years before, you know, because it takes about 4 years in our system to get the black belt. So they'd been with me three and a half years. Well, there was a lot of complaining going on because now I was no longer teaching the class. Well, then I quickly learned that lesson and I swapped them out because I thought that, you know, I should be the first impression to teach the white belts and the beginner class and they should see me. And, well, I quickly learned that it was better for me to do that. I actually took them and had them start teaching the white belts, which, you know, in some aspects they're harder to teach than the junior black belts, but then in other aspects they're easier to teach than the junior black belts. And so, you know, I thought, well, if I can get them used to them, I can just start letting, you know, it takes about 9 months to get through our beginners program, and then they move into the intermediate, which is a year program. So really, within 4 years, technically within 4 years, I should be able to just back off out of the teaching and not, you know, now I have, like, there's people I don't even teach.
Right.
I've never taught them. They'll go to their black belt test, and I may have come into their class and maybe have taught a class, but I've never really taught them. So that was like a big, big thing for me. And then I can remember my wife saying, because I used to get a ton of Christmas presents, and I've talked about this on another call, but
yeah.
You know, I used to get a ton of Christmas presents because I was teaching everyone, and at Christmas time I'd get them. And she goes, doesn't that bother you that, you know, nobody's acknowledging you now? And I said, oh, no. I said, they're acknowledging me because when they buy my instructor's Christmas presents, I mean, my instructors wouldn't be where they're at today without my tutelage. I mean, not that they couldn't have been, but they're certainly there now because of me. And
right.
I don't say that, you know, I'm saying that humbly, obviously, but,
yeah.
Or trying to anyways. So, yeah, I mean, and I guess I decided that if they can teach 80% to what I believe I teach, I'm okay with that because I can help them grow that other 20%.
Yeah. And you know what, Dwayne, we did talk about that, and I felt the same thing, too, where I'm going like, damn it, I'm the one who owns the school. I'm the one who, you know, built this school. I'm the one that taught these guys, and I'm not getting anything, right? So it is a little bit painful. However, though, I do think that we should educate people. Like, rather than, and this is on a little bit of a side path, I think that as school owners, we need to educate our students that they do have to pay respect to you as the sensei. They do have to pay respect to me as the sensei. Because once they stop doing that, they lose a little bit of the secret sauce, so to speak, you know, and they forget about the protocol and the tradition and all of that stuff, and then they lose on the lesson. So it's important for us to not be so humble and to teach that lesson, because that's what happens in the martial arts. In the modern day society, we have dropped a lot of the protocol. To not be so presumptuous and you know, demand that they revere us as students. However, we need to keep that in the playbook, so to speak, because without it, a lot of the lesson of what we do as traditional martial artists are lost. Do you agree?
I totally do, and I'll get and I love this obviously because it makes me feel good. But I'll get compliments from parents and go, you know, wow, you know. I'm glad you were in class today. And it's just because all I did was go in there and teach like I normally teach. So I can still elicit that wow factor when I teach,
right.
Which is great. You know, and it could be I just come in there for a 5-minute mat chat to maybe I want to run a drill with them. And I do that every once in a while because I do want to make my presence known. It's not that I'm totally absent, but it's nice to know that I don't have to be in the business, I can work on the business. And
you know, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, no, it's interesting. This past Sunday that I had breakfast with two of my up and coming yellow belt adults. And they've been dying to go out to breakfast with me to just pick my brain. And I basically sat at the table. We ordered our food. And I said, go ahead, ask me questions. And it, like 2 hours later, we were still chatting, and they were asking me about my history and how I grew up and why I took this martial art and where I traveled in Japan. And to the point where I was like, wow, this is really cool. I wish all the other students cared that much about knowing who I am and what I do and why I am, you know, have developed this school that they're training in. And it was just an awesome thing where I wish that I could get others to have that same desire. However, I think I'm going to put together a few meetings where I'll bring in a vegan lunch and have students come. And if they want to just chat and ask questions and learn about the history, the culture, and what I've done to bring this school to fruition. So it's important for us to never give up that, because those students now, my new students, don't see that as much because I am not there every day. I used to have it in every lesson I would teach. I would talk. I would tell stories. Now my students are doing that for me, and there's a less my of my personality on the mat. And I don't want your school to be personality-driven, but I want it to be driven by your personality, if that makes sense.
It totally does, and you can do that. That's the thing that most school owners, I think, get hung up on is they believe, like you said, they have to do everything because, you know, they don't have somebody that can do everything the way that
right.
they feel they can do it. But right. I was going to say, too, the other thing is, you know, when you have a karate studio, you know, it's funny because we are the only business that has hand movements when people ask us how our job is. So, you
right.
know, I'll have people come up to me and say, you know, they'll put the hands in the karate kid, you know, karate chop position and say, how's that, you know, they make little circles, how's that karate thing going?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and we are the only profession that has hand movements when somebody's talking to us. And forgive me for saying this, it's meant to be a joke, so no one please take offense to this, and to show you that, you know, I'm not sexist or anything, is that you know, I did say this to my pastor one time when he asked me, you know, how's that karate thing going? And he moved his hands in that motion, and, you know, and I said, you know, your jaw might drop when I say this, but, you know, I said, well, now, you know, if I were a gynecologist, how would you ask
right.
me how my job was going?
Right, you know? Exactly.
And so, anyways, I say that because, unfortunately, the society looks at our job as not really a job. And then sometimes what we do, well, oftentimes what we do, especially when we begin, is that we look at it as this karate thing. And I loved how earlier in our conversation you used the word business and you used the word company. And
right.
that's where the paradigm shift needs to happen for us martial artists, is that, yes, we're a martial artist first, but we are running a business. We are running a company, and we need to look at it as such.
Right.
And in any business and in any company, you yourself cannot do everything.
Right.
You're not going to be happy if you do everything. I mean, yes, you might do everything perfect, but you are not going to be a happy camper when it's all done. You might
right.
be satisfied that it's done to the way that you want it done, but you're not going to be happy at all. And so I think that's the first thing, is like you brought up the fear of delegating, the fear of releasing that, but then also understanding that there needs to be a paradigm shift. You need to look at it as a company, as a business, and then you need to assign roles in that company, in that business, and you yourself cannot be the program director and the head instructor and the janitor and this and that. You have to delegate those things.
Yeah, you know what, Dwayne? It's kind of interesting, because as I sit here and listen to you, I agree with you 1,000%, and however, there's a little bit of tension. I could almost feel it in my skin and my head of what I'm envisioning martial artists out there hearing when we talk about, and it's funny because I feel this tension because of the word company, because of the word business, because I can almost think that a lot of these people listening are going to think of it in a negative way, and I had to detach myself from that mindset, and it literally was an addiction, and it was something that was an anchor that was ingrained in my mind, where I felt guilty considering my business, my martial arts school, a business or a company. And it took me a lot of pattern shifts to be able to be okay with that, but not allow the word company and business and sales to affect the quality of what I give as a, and I'm holding up quote fingers, as a service, to my clientele. Just because I run my company in a professional manner, my business, and my company happens to be martial arts, or it could be coaching people, or it could be a coffee shop, I would not be embarrassed if I owned a coffee shop and I called my company my coffee shop a company, because it is. I'm selling coffee. But with martial arts, we become afraid to be able to consider this anything less than this grandiose kind of thing, and it is. Don't get me wrong. I believe in the martial arts as the magic pill. I'm, you know me. I think that it's the best thing you can ever do in the entire world, and I know for a fact, I have thousands of students that it's changed their lives to the point and save some people's lives. But the thing is that we have to understand, the better we are at running our corporation, our company, our business, the more people's lives we can affect, right? And that's where being a business owner, being a professional, is essential. You got to stop. If you're out there and you feel this way, you have to stop thinking that way so that you can become the consummate professional. Because if you're better at what you're doing and you could get more students, how many more lives can you change, right? So, but there's so many masters out there that only have 15, 20 students. And for them, that's okay. But I'd rather have 150 students that I'm changing their lives than 15 or 20. It makes much more of an impact on the environment and the world. Do you agree?
I totally agree. And that falls right in line with, and again, I know we're not talking about this, but it does have a fear factor along with it, is about charging a premium price. And because
right.
I charge a premium price, I'm actually able to help more people. And what I mean by that is, number one, I already give. Like I'm a giver. I give money to certain things. And the only
right.
reason I can give more money is because I make more money. But the
right.
other thing alongside of that is, because I make more money, there are people that I'm actually able to help when they need help. So I've
right.
got somebody that, you know, they've been with me for 4 or 5 years and their parent just lost the job, and I'm like, hey, let me help you out until, you know, this point in time, and let's reevaluate. And you know, I'm able to do that. Or I've got a lady who has 4 foster kids, and
mm-hmm.
she just really felt a calling to foster kids. Her kids are already done and grown, and she has 4 kids that she's raising, and she really would like the benefits of martial arts. She's heard about our school. She's known people that have gone through our school, and she's like, this is where I want them to be. The state will pay a portion of it, but you know, it's not what I can make, you know, from a normal person.
Right.
But see, if I was not charging a premium, you know, if I wasn't charging a premium price, I wouldn't be able to help out people like that at all.
Right. And you know what, too? Sadly, I would love to be able to say that in a perfect world that if we did things for free, people would appreciate it. That if we gave away
True.
The form, that people would appreciate it. Sadly, and there's no change in this in our society, people equate quality and with, you know, payment. And, you know, the higher the premium, the better the quality. The freer it is, the less important it is. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I offered seminars that were free and people just don't come. And then I offer a seminar for $79 and they come. It's same exact person.
Right.
You know, so we have to be careful with how that happens within our studio as well. And if we give tuition away, and we could be the cheapest, and there's a guy down the road from me that's been, he's no longer in business. He was down the road from me for years. His ads always said, we're the least expensive in the area. We don't do contracts. He was the anti-Ally. Everything that I did, he didn't do. And that was his selling point. Lo and behold, he's out of business. He paid more in advertisement trying to get the point across that he doesn't do what I do. And he probably put himself in the poorhouse because of it. Sadly, though,
and people are calling to get the benefits of karate, not the features.
Exactly. And you know what? I feel bad when people think that, you know, like, and you know, I've had this conversation just last night, you know, I said you need to raise your prices to my person that I was talking to, and they said my people won't pay that. I'm like, if I had a dollar for everybody who said that to me across the world. My area, in Costa Rica, I had a school up in the mountains, and the guy was like, no one's going to pay New York City, Long Island rates. I'm like, will you please try it for me? Just try it. $120 a month at the time. I mean, he was charging $40 a month. And it was and he said, it's not going to happen. It just won't. It's not going to. I said, do me a favor and try it. Well, he said to me, this was his answer, and he didn't even connect to it. He said, you know, yeah, it's weird. The people are paying it, but you know what? To be honest, it's a whole different kind of clientele. I'm getting more doctors and lawyers and accountants and business owners. It's just weird how that's happening. He didn't get the fact that these are the people that he's now, because those people associated higher income with higher quality, and he had those people. He didn't lose all his other students. Some of them said, well, I've been waiting for you to raise your prices for years. So it's important for us to break that trend and understand that if you want to do it, you got to do it right. I mean, that's just my thing.
Right. Well, and, you know, the other thing along with this is the fear factor of letting go, like we've already talked about, raising your prices or whatever. If you don't do those things, just like Michael Gerber speaks about in the E-Myth, is that all you've done is you've traded one job for another. And you had said this in the beginning that, you know, I forget how you worded it, but basically you said that you've just created a job for yourself. And that's
right.
What Michael Gerber talks about too. And that's good. It's much better I feel much better working for myself than I did for corporate America.
Right.
And mostly because I have control, but then, also because I make a difference. I feel like I make a much better impact on people than I did when I was, you know, in corporate America. So, that's all well and good, but then being a school owner, there should be, or a business owner, there should be there should be some freedom that comes along with that because of the systems and other things that you set up. But if you're doing everything yourself, you're missing the freedom part of owning your own business. And I'll give you a for instance, you know, I'm not running today just because I'm letting my knee rest, but I'm supposed to run today, and I had already blocked out time to run. Well, now I'm not doing that, but I still have that time blocked out. Well, what am I doing? Something came up with my son in Chicago, so I'm going to drive up there. He needs to look at some other apartments, and so we're going to go. I'm going to pick my wife up from work, and we're going to go up there and look at apartments. And I have the ability to be able to do that. One,
now,
I already blocked out the time, but two, I mean, I can do those things because of what I've set up at school. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I want to stop you there on what you're saying because I want you to add to this. Did it take you a little bit of mental adjustment and to free yourself of the addiction and the guilt of being able to just say, I'm not going to do it myself today? I know it did for me. So I know that people out there, they get so addicted to knowing every single second of the day what's going on in their studio. And I have two cameras. It's silly. As I'm talking to you right now, I have two cameras on my third monitor that I'm watching my studios as we speak. However, I have let go where I could just go home and eat dinner and watch TV and just blank my mind out that I have four businesses running. You know, so did it take you a while to get past that point where you were able to just say, because you probably years ago would have went in because your knee was hurting, but your appointment got canceled, so now you would go in. But can you, what did it take you to be able to separate and not to be able to feel guilty or feel, you know, like you had to?
Yeah, well, I don't, there's some days that, like, I'll give you, for instance, we had Friday night, we had a back-to-school buddy bash. We do that every Friday, like the first three Fridays in September. And, you know, kids bring in their non-karate friends for free if they, you know, they get to attend for free if they bring a non-karate friend. Well, anyhow, I didn't run it. I didn't even have my head instructor run it. I had, my next guy down, run it with another one of our capable instructors. And my wife said to me, she says, you know, are you sure about not being there? I said, well, I mean, it's only, you know, like 25 kids. I said, that's maybe, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 more than a birthday party. And this guy runs birthday parties on the weekends for us, you know,
right.
And he does quite a fine job. So, and so, I mean, it runs through my head where I'm like, well, gosh, I don't want them to think that I'm not doing anything. But that's also where, you know, when I first hired my head instructor that I have now, we sat down. I remember we were at Starbucks. We sat down. I said, hey, look, I think you're the right man for this position. Here's the what I'm willing to do, what I'm willing to pay you, blah, 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 blah. But I do want you to know something, that you are walking into a business that is already ready. It's already running. And I said, it's nothing against your abilities, because when I say this next statement, I don't want you to think that I don't think you have abilities, because you do. But I've created a system in such a way that when the light goes off and you're supposed to press the red button, you press it. And when
right.
the other light goes off and you're supposed to press the green button, you press it. And
right.
now you're a great button presser. In fact, often is the time that you will know when that light's going to go off and you actually are ready to hit it as soon as it goes because you know it's going to happen. And I
yeah.
said, that's great. And the reason you're that good is because of the systems that I've created up until this point. And so
right.
I don't want you to think that necessarily you're just a button pusher, but you're a great button pusher because of how you've been trained up until this point. And
right.
and because I told him, I said, I don't want you to get a big head. And that's the last thing I want from my instructors is to go, oh, well, he's not here teaching and I can do it myself. And yeah, a lot of it you can do, but you also have this big support system and this is the reason why you can do it.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, you know, just to add to that, you could be able to, of course, they know that they have the opportunity to say, hey, I have a new way of pushing the button. You might want to look at it and see. And I know you, Dwayne, you're open to anything that will improve your business so that they could feel like they own stuff rather than just, you know, pushing buttons. They have an ownership mentality or at least a management type of mentality, and this is important.
Absolutely.
And to hear that
absolutely.
Out. Absolutely. Right, yeah, so
yeah, I
can't
tell you how many times I ask for feedback, and sometimes their answers are better than mine. And I always, like even when I was in corporate America, I always asked the people that were in the front lines, you know, what could we do better? And they almost all the time had a better idea than I did when I was just behind the desk. So, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, and now, and I would like to, you know, the reason why I wanted to bring this whole entire topic up, and you know, we could, the good thing about you and I is we've had so much experience in all these areas, we could go on and on and on and on and break it down into four or five calls. However, the ultimate goal for me with this type of topic is that we want our listeners to be able to understand that, yeah, you might be feeling that addiction. Yeah, you might be feeling like you need to do it all yourself. But I'm going to give you an example. Like, for example, I'm working with someone right now, and they have, you know, the mindset of like, you know, like I have had in the past. You know, I'll just hire someone that I know. They're a mom, or you know, they have kids, so that they'll work part time and they'll, you know, they'll be able to do it. But you know, and blah blah blah. We've all heard the whole entire story of, you know, what they're doing and so on. I suggested to them, listen, yes, it's good if that person can commit. It's even better. But if they're not doing the job properly, don't be so nice and give it to them. Find someone who's going to be outstanding in their job. And the only concern, and I hate to sound like this, is for them to help the school grow. If you want to not even think about it in a monetary sense, it's just to teach more students, get more students, be around more people so we could change more lives. Now, of course, that equates to more dollars and more retail and more special events and all that other stuff. However, though, we have to understand that the priority is always about the right person for the right job. We do not run orphanages, and this might be a good name for our thing. We don't run orphanages for unemployed people. We're not hiring people just because we want to get them a job. I used to do that. Like I once had a guy who was a student of mine, and he actually stayed with me for quite some time and helped me run businesses. But he's like, you know, I'm really down on my luck. You know, my wife left me. I have two kids. I'm depressed. I'm on medication. And he looked like a biker, really long hair, you know, a biker vest. I'm like, how about you come to work for me? Like, I'm like, what the heck was wrong with me? What was I thinking? Like, every single thing he told me was why I should have been running the other way. However, you know, he was an okay employee. We dealt with more issues than we should have. And, you know, it turned out to be okay. But I should have been hiring with the resume of only people that were going to benefit me and be the best employee that I've ever had in my company, nothing more. And that's something that we tend to forget, that they're there to teach the best classes to help our students become the best that they can be. We're not there to go, well, Johnny's in a bad mood today, he had a fight with his wife, so we'll let it slide. He'll get there. He'll eventually be great. You wouldn't have him making crappy coffee every day and just saying, well, he's just had a fight with his wife, all the coffee stinks today. No, you'd fire him if he kept on doing that. Yet with martial arts, why don't we do that? I find it to be the craziest, like in our business, why don't we do that? It's just insane, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, it's normal just because, you know, we think we can change them, or we want to be a nice guy or gal, And, you know, the thing is, we wouldn't allow that happening in our class while we're teaching. You know, if that person was still making a ruckus, or we told them to knock it off or whatever, we wouldn't
right.
allow that in class, but we allow that outside of it. So there's a lot
yeah.
of, you know, a lot of spillover from the lessons that we teach inside the classroom that we should use when we run a business.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting how, you know, we if we just took martial arts out of the equation, if that was what we said every time we said, okay, instead of my martial arts school, if I was a hero shop or a coffee shop, a restaurant, a car a repair store, you know, like a brake company, if they did faulty work, would I tolerate it that much? We may have one reprimand, one retrain, and then we'd move on, because especially in a company that does brakes for people that are driving in their car, you know, couldn't that be life-threatening? So do we deal with that? No, we would say, you either do the job right or you're out of here. Yet in our martial arts studios, we tend to really make people, give them chances, let them, allow them, give them space, you know, all on our dime, all on our time, all on the sacrifice of integrity and hurting our students. Right? I mean, so something that we all need to look into, and just next time you have a question about what you're doing and whether it being right, just ask it and say, if I ran a coffee shop, would I allow this behavior to happen?
Right, right.
You know, that's really kind of where we should be at. So, yeah, and the, you know, this conversation could go on and on. I mean, the topic is amazing, but it's how we break out of our ideals, or what our vision is, or what we think and appear, think our vision is for our studios, for what we want it to be. We need to know that, you know, we have to have a grander plan and not be afraid to reach out for it. Does that
yeah,
make
well,
sense?
And let's, it totally does. And I know that we're running out of time, so I'll just kind of recap a couple of things. Number one is, I would challenge the school owners that are listening to go ahead and take this next week and document how you are spending your time. Color coordinate them from, you know,
journaling.
Emails to different things, and then dissect it. And then how would you feel, Allie, if we said to them, you know, hey, if you would like to, you know, share that with us, then we would be happy to get with you and go over it. Now, I know that our time is limited, so, you know, what
yeah.
if we do it for the first five people or something that, you know what I mean? I'd love to
hey,
open it up to everybody, but I don't know that we have the ability to be able to do that on a one-to-one
why don't
basis
we,
like that.
We be generous, why don't we be generous and say the first 10 and you do five and I do five?
Sounds fine.
You know, and that way, I mean, I love this process because it is quite painful. There's another drill that I always do with my clients, and just to quickly summarize it, is what I call the student grid. Whenever I take on a coaching client, I say, I want to see your student grid. What does that mean? I basically want to see every one of their students that are on the books. I want to know how old they are, what rank they are, how long they've been with you, what program they're in, and what price they're paying. I don't care about specific information like phone number and address. It's has no value to me. I want to know what their actual student grid is. And let me tell you, that is probably the most painful thing for a business owner to do, because when they look at it, they always say to me, I'm depressed now. I thought I had 150 students, but only 105 of them are paying. Or I thought I had 150 people at $110 a month, but I gave out all these special deals. And that's why I'm only grossing $8,000 a month versus 10 at $100, you know, 10,000. So, I mean, it's another thing to look at and then share that student grid with us. Or look at it yourself and evaluate, like, where are you at? What programs are people in? You know, if you have a black belt program, how many percentages of them upgrade from basic program to black belt club? It would be another eye-opener to really see it's the genetics of your school, really.
You mean
so
running it like a business, huh?
Yeah. But you know what? I have to be honest. There are so many businesses, and let's go back to a coffee shop, the mom and poppers, that don't know this themselves. They're just selling coffee every day, and when they run out, they order more coffee beans, and you know they guide themselves based on how many cups are gone. And you know, I've dealt and coached, you know, landscape construction companies, and I've literally just been able to, with a slight shift, make people rich, because they don't realize how much they're losing. I had a client that basically, you know, he was bringing in massive money, but he wasn't making massive money because he didn't know where it was all going. And, you know, then he found when he did this DNA, the student grid, how many, I swear to God, like $70,000 in people not paying their bills. People that were actively training that had missed 4 or 5 months because it fell through the cracks. It didn't go into billing. Massive money. Like he could have been driving a Ferrari.
Right.
And it was just, and he was doing the work. He was teaching the lessons. He had the people there. They weren't trying to beat him out of it. He was very unorganized, and he didn't realize, because when you're in the thick of things, you're just churning away. You know, you're just doing. Sometimes you don't step back and look at your company from above and say, wow, how can I orchestrate this? You know, I never realized that, you know, I always make fun of, you know, in a nice way, when my daughter's in her flute recital, that lady who comes up or the guy and is swinging the sticks, the conductor. Because I was in a rock band, you know, for many years, where we knew our music, the drummer played the beat, we followed the beat, and we all knew our parts. We didn't have someone in front of us conducting when I sing, pointing to me when the harmonies come, and pointing to the guitar player when the lead comes. We would just play. So as a rock guy, I thought it was silly. Why do they need to have someone in front of them? But my daughter said how valuable it was to be that conductor, where the conductor shows when the next piece comes in, because they can't always hear each other's parts from where they sit in the pit or wherever. So without that conductor, people are lost. They're waiting for the point for when the flute comes in and the point for when the music gets low. We need to be conductors of our own lives sometimes, stepping back and orchestrating what's going on rather than being in the thick of things and letting a seminar I did in Vegas called Being in the Blender. You jump in, you hit the blender, you spin around for 4 hours, you jump out, you're dizzy, you go home, recover, and you come back tomorrow, jump back in the blender. We need to be the one on the outside pushing the blender button, stepping back and making sure all the 5 blenders are running properly, if that makes a better analogy.
Yeah, and the numbers are nonpartisan, the numbers are non-emotional, and the numbers are always true.
And they're painful sometimes when you look at it and go like, Jesus, what am I losing? Like, what am I leaving on the table? Like, even with retail, and I say, wow, you're doing all this money, but you're doing no retail. Do you realize that you could be doing $3,000-$4,000 a month, $36,000 a year in retail, which 50% or 60% is profit? They're like, wow, yeah, I never thought of it that way. People think of retail as like, you know, an annoyance. When I look at it as a blessing, you know. So anyway, you know, rather than go, this is where I want you all to step out of your blender and look at your business, you know, do the journaling, maybe do your student grid, share it with us. Dwayne, that's a really cool offer, 5 for you, 5 for me. And we would love to look over your journals and be able to help you and orchestrate a little of what we could do to save you time and make you more productive, you know, for free. So that's our offer. Amazing.
Well, let's do this. Whoever leaves a comment on schoolownertalk.com on this particular blog post, the first 10 to leave that comment, and you have to be completed, like the week has to be done. So don't go and right now leave a comment and you hadn't started it. You know, get the week completed and then leave the comment, and, you know, then we'll, you know, be happy to do that with you.
Awesome.
Allie, I know that we're running out of time, so let's go ahead and wrap it up, and everybody share this with other school owners, but take the challenge here. Let's get the journal done for the week, and let us help you.
Right. Absolutely. All right, guys.
All right,
so
thanks,
awesome.
Allie.
Thanks a lot, Dwayne. Have a great day, everybody who's listening. Hope you enjoyed this call, and, you know, keep rocking.